3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
A Senate breakthrough on gun violence legislation, plus a brutal weekend for cryptocurrency continues, and why many retailers are suddenly sitting on mountains of inventory.
Consumer behavior really shifted very quickly. People are going out more, they're going back to work, they're traveling more, and they want to spend on those activities. Well, retailers got caught flat-footed.
It's Monday, June 13th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. U.S. Senate negotiators say they have reached a bipartisan framework on measures intended to limit some access to firearms, paving the way for the broadest federal legislation on guns in decades. The proposal would also fund mental health programs and school security, but does not ban any weapons or raise the age to buy assault-style weapons. While the framework has the support of 10 Republican senators, enough to pass a final bill in the Senate, the deal still faces hurdles to becoming law, as the actual legislation has yet to be drafted. Sunday's breakthrough followed nationwide demonstrations Saturday calling on Congress to act on proposed gun control measures. Parent Natasha Lawson was among those that joined a rally in California, along with Mark Warriner and Audrey Green.
We have to be able to do something. We can't continue to just sit back and expect something to happen.
The shooting in Texas definitely woke me up and made me get more involved with this in the community.
No one's here to take away anyone's Second Amendment right. We're here to see that sensible laws are put in place.
In Washington, the House committee investigating the January 6, 2021 storming of the U.S. Capitol will hold a second hearing today. The committee plans to provide evidence that former President Donald Trump and his advisors knew he had lost the election and yet still continued to spread false claims of voter fraud. Trump has said he did nothing wrong and continues to claim the election was stolen from him. Turning overseas, Ukrainian officials have warned they face defeat in the eastern Donbas region unless the country sees a broad and rapid increase in military assistance. A potential defeat, they warn, could allow Russia to pursue its offensive to the cities of Odessa, Kharkiv, and possibly all the way to the capital, Kiev, after it regroups. Later this week, the leaders of France, Germany, and Italy plan to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev, officials said. The trip would be the first to Ukraine for the three Western leaders since the start of the war. And French President Emmanuel Macron is at risk of losing his legislative majority after the results of a first round of parliamentary elections Sunday showed his candidates running neck and neck with leftist rivals. WSJ Paris-based politics reporter Noemi Bisserbe says that if those results hold after a June 19th runoff, they could complicate Macron's efforts to press ahead with his pro-business agenda and potentially leave a mark on French foreign policy.
Jean-Luc Mélenchon, the far-left leader in France, campaigned on clawing back powers from the European Union and leaving the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. He has always had an ambiguous relationship with Russia and defended its president, Vladimir Putin, right up until a few days before the invasion of Ukraine.
Last night, one of the largest cryptocurrency lenders, Celsius Network, told users it was pausing all withdrawals, swaps, and transfers between accounts due to extreme market conditions. The company, which lends out customer deposits to other users to earn a return, said it hoped to lift its suspension as quickly as possible, but couldn't predict when that would happen. WSJ Asia Markets editor Quinton Webb is here with a look at the brutal weekend that just occurred for cryptocurrencies. Hi, Quinton.
Hi there.
So just how bad was what happened in crypto markets over the weekend, and is the sell-off continuing?
The sell-off is continuing as we speak, and it is pretty bad. You know, I mean, I think the last few months have been very tough for the crypto industry, and, you know, think of it in broad terms, Late last year, the total market cap of crypto assets was something in the order of $3 trillion. Now we're close to $1 trillion, so it's been a real wipeout. And it seems as if the fresh leg down in the last few days was partly spurred by this sort of broader sell-off as US inflation has proved to be hotter and stickier than expected. The fear is that the Fed will have to keep raising interest rates and potentially risk a recession. That's hit more conventional assets as well as digital assets pretty hard.
Yeah, why else is this happening to the crypto market now beyond what you just sketched out?
Well, so it's not clear really whether this is cause or symptom, but as you said at the beginning, you know, this crypto lender Celsius has basically put a halt to withdrawals and swaps, etc. And so that is not a reassuring sign in a way. It's a sort of worrying signal about the stability of that market. And, you know, of course, we've seen more serious issues recently with the collapse of algorithmic stablecoins. And I guess this is just a fresh sort of question mark about the stability of some of the institutions in the crypto space.
Quentin, are cryptocurrencies and companies dealing in them more exposed to market volatility? And if so, why might that be?
Well, yes, crypto assets do tend to be highly volatile. And, you know, there's a couple of reasons there. One, of course, is that in general, they're not really susceptible to fundamental analysis in the same way that you might say companies are. So that probably makes them more speculative and more susceptible to swings in investor sentiment. And the second thing, of course, is that these are markets that trade all the time, whereas most traditional asset markets have slightly better defined opening hours. So it can kind of foreshadow now what's happening in other markets. And that is becoming increasingly important, I think, as we're seeing more traditional investors tiptoe into the crypto market. The linkages between the two are increasing.
That was Wall Street Journal Asia Markets editor Quentin Webb. Quentin, thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
Coming up, goods are piling up on the shelves for a number of major retailers. That's welcome news for discount hunters, but less so for companies caught off guard by a range of market challenges. We'll have that story after the break.
What then will the future reveal?
There's one thing we know about the future. It's being built now.
We all have a stake in the future.
The future.
The future.
The future.
And the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a glimpse of what's on the way. I'm Danny Lewis. Join us as we dig into how science and technology are shaping the future.
For that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Many major retail chains are known for being able to leverage their supply chain networks and data systems to anticipate customer demand. But WSJ retail reporter Suzanne Kapner says retailers from Target and Walmart to The Gap are all contending with excess inventory as they struggle to match supply with demand. So what is going on here? Suzanne joins us now with more. Hi, Suzanne. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And so, Suzanne, what kind of stressors are retailers contending with right now, and why exactly?
We're seeing a reversal, really, of the past 2 years where retailers could not get enough inventory because of factory shutdowns in Asia. Goods were really scarce, and so they got nervous that they would have empty shelves. So a lot of retailers placed large orders. They placed them far in advance just to make sure they'd have stuff to sell. And now, as the supply chain has started loosening up, we're seeing some of these retailers with too many goods, specifically in certain categories.
So what examples do we have of retailers getting it wrong and not stocking what consumers want?
Well, during the pandemic, consumers were really buying a lot of casual clothes like sweatpants, activewear, items for their home, you know, mainly because they couldn't go anywhere. They weren't going to restaurants as much. They weren't traveling as much. They weren't going to the office or social engagements. In the past few months, consumer behavior really shifted very quickly. People are going out more. They're going back to work. They're traveling more, and they want to spend on those activities. Well, retailers got caught flat-footed. They had been bringing in a lot of the casual clothes and home items that consumers had wanted over the past 2 years. And when consumer behavior switched very quickly, they just didn't have enough stuff consumers wanted and too much of the stuff they didn't want.
I'm just sort of surprised that this happened. It cuts against the narrative of the power of data and how it helps anticipate consumer demand, is it not?
You would think, you know, with all the data out there that retailers would have a better read on the situation, but we are going through somewhat of a once in a generation experience between the supply chain slowdown and the consumer behavior shifting so fast. It's really like a perfect storm for them, and they just really got caught not prepared.
It does seem like clothing companies are having an especially difficult time right now. Is that because they weren't able to get the clothing they needed for the right season?
Well, that's certainly part of it. A lot of retailers got winter sweaters and other winter gear in the spring when they can't sell that stuff. So some of them are packing that away and hoping to bring it out next fall when the weather cools again. So that's one element. But also Gap, for instance, said consumers started, you know, they shifted their behavior very quickly from wanting things like sweatpants to dressier clothes. And there is a long lead time. These retailers sometimes work on, you know, 8 months to a year between development and getting the product in their stores. So it's not that easy for them to change when consumer behavior changes very quickly.
I was going to say, besides having to pay a lot to store goods until the season for them comes around again, how else are companies working out the push-pull in the supply chain right now?
Well, it's the age-old method of discounting. So we're seeing brands like Old Navy and Target and even Macy's going back to offering more promotions to clear out the excess goods.
Suzanne, we just recently saw Target issue a profit warning. I imagine these rather unplanned discounts are part of what is affecting retailers' bottom lines?
Exactly. It's going to hurt profits. Unanticipated discounts are not a good thing for retailers. It hurts their profits and, you know, it eats into their bottom line. I believe there are several retailers that reported earnings recently that lower their profit guidance for the year. You know, we've seen several other companies, including Gap, lower profit guidance for the year in part because of these higher discount levels.
And what other costs besides discounting are these retailers dealing with right now that could weigh on their bottom lines?
Well, you still have higher freight costs. They're all dealing with higher freight costs as sometimes they're still air freighting goods in from Asia to make sure they have product in time. So that's also weighing on their bottom lines.
And so this is sort of bleak news for some businesses, but good news for consumers, I gather it.
Well, yeah, there will be some better bargains out there, especially at a time of inflation. Consumers will benefit from some lower prices and some discounting at some of these major retailers. And we really didn't see a lot of that over the past 2 years because products were scarce. And so retailers didn't have to mark them down. But now we are starting to see the return of the markdown.
That was Wall Street Journal retail reporter Suzanne Kapner. Suzanne, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, the best of Broadway was celebrated at last night's Tony Awards, with the Lehman Trilogy winning for Best Play and A Strange Loop for Best Musical. But WSJ contributor Charles Passy says the unsung stars of Broadway now are those handling the plumbing, as productions increasingly embrace elaborate water displays to wow audiences, from thunderstorms and rainy downpours to even an onstage shower scene.
First thing you have to deal with is where does the water go? So shows have to build in things like troughs to catch the runoff. There's a lot of mops and cleanup that also has to go on. They have to have the flooring treated so that actors don't slip. I mean, it's very complex. There's also issues with how you make the rain look and sound. It's not just good enough to run water through a pipe. So you might need misting. You might need dribbling. You know, you need a kind of a recipe for your rain.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.